Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Welcome to episode 69 of Party Foul Radio.
I'm 69.
Yeah, I know. We should have lined. I feel like we should have lined up
like a porn star.
I know. I feel like we should have really had somebody like real nasty. I wonder if Sister Rome is available.
She's a nasty whore. Or so, Lexi, girl.
Oh, my God. Lexi Shimmers. Yes. Anyway, I'm Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
We got all kinds of ahead of ourselves because we were about to 69. Not each other.
Right.
But, yeah, that's so not going to happen. Anyway, it is episode 69, and I do feel like we should have... I should have planned ahead and got us some porn stars. And
somebody,
all
girl.
Chicken, blah, blah,
right.
Up in here. So, oh God,
we'll play a T.S. Madison promo for y'all.
Yeah, maybe we could get Heclina. She's a scandalous whore.
Oh God, I would live for you guys to be on the same show. We have to talk to each other.
What? We talked to each other. We just saw each other today.
Did you really?
Yeah, we saw each other today. We both expressed concern. Like it's out there on Facebook. Our mutual dear friend
Michael
Chu, DJ MC2's house got robbed.
Was it right? I thought it was someone who was staying with him.
So he let somebody stay, like crash over who needed a place to stay. And I think that they robbed him and they definitely ransacked it. Like the whole place.
Why did they
have
to do all that? Like,
I don't know. And anyway, I don't know. The only reason I brought it up is because he made it super public by putting it out there on Facebook. So Michael, MC2, our thoughts are with you. I hope that, you know, oh, girl.
If you start a GoFundMe, girl, let us know.
Girl, okay, sure. If you start a GoFundMe.
I mean, because his house got, his TV was all fucked up. I think his computer, he had, glass all over the place.
Yeah.
He's going to need some help getting that shit back together, girl.
I mean, at least a professional cleaning crew of some kind.
Something, girl.
But that, you know, the thought of that is so emotionally draining. The thought of somebody, violating your space and, destroying shit. Girl, I said to somebody, I was like, girl, somebody could come in and ransack my drag room. It would take me a month just to figure out it even happened, bitch.
Girl,
I'd be like...
They could ransack your entire house and you wouldn't realize it happened.
Whatever. This place is...
Look at the dishes.
Girl, the dishes. I'm not... Obviously, I'm not looking at the dishes, bitches, so... Woo, girl, don't look at the dishes. Anyways, so just as a heads up, later this episode... We're going to have Stan Zimmerman on with us. He was one of the writers of the Golden Girls. He also spent a number of years writing for the Gilmore Girls. And he is back on Telefilms. It's a new website geared towards the lesbian community, our lady friends out there. And he is writing a series on Telefilms called Sex and Execs, S-E-C-S and Execs, about secretaries and executives. And he's writing and directing it. He's going to tell us all about that, plus... He's got a new project that he's working on with a gay A-list, honey, of celebrities who's looking at joining him for that. So all of that and more on this episode.
Who's your favorite Golden Girl?
Who is my favorite? It's hard, to pick a favorite Golden Girl because
I live for Betty White.
For Rose?
Yes.
Well, you know, the thing is, of course, Sam...
But of course, everyone loves Blanche.
So, Sam and I talked about this kind of a little bit, or Sam, Stan and I talked about this a little bit in our interview that everybody kind of which Golden Girl are you? There's quizzes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't think that anyone is strictly one of the one. You know what I mean? I think that there are combinations of all of the above. And every gay man I know practically is like, if they don't think they're Blanche, everybody else thinks they're Blanche.
Right.
Blanche. But you are Blanche. You are. So, I don't know. My Grindr profile says that I'm Dorothy in the streets and Blanche in the sheet.
You're such a mess. I love it.
Dorothy love in the it. Sheets and Blanche in the sheets, honey.
That's so good.
That way, you know, you can throw them off. They think right. they don't know what you are until you, like, that you throw them down on the bed and...
Or throwing yourself on the bed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Which reminds me, there was this one time I came home, and I don't know what made me think of this, but I'll explain it. And since this has got a, probably it's a sex story, it's appropriate for episode 69.
Oh, no.
But there, it's a sex-related story. There's no actual sex, Pearl. Just calm down.
Okay, we do. Okay.
So, I had gone out with this guy two times once. So the first time we went out, I kind of wasn't feeling the vibe. But in the past, I have gone out with people and...
given them a second chance.
And right, and given them a second chance because I remember many years ago, my first real boyfriend here in San Francisco, the first time I went out with him... I was like, well, he's super nice, but I don't see this happening. And then we went out a second time, and all of a sudden there was chemistry, and we were together for over a year. But obviously, that was almost 20 years ago, Pearl. Pearl's like looking at me like, girl!
I was going to say, you haven't had your walls busted open, I'm sure, in quite some time,
Pearl. Oh, no, not the walls busted open. Anyway, so this gentleman came back to my house. We went and did something, and then we came back to my house, and we were going to just, like, watch TV.
Oh, right.
We were just going to watch TV.
You were going to come back here and just watch TV.
Yeah. People hang out and watch TV.
Okay.
So, anyway.
And this is your, like, second date.
This is the second date, yes.
Okay.
So, we were just going to watch TV. Sure. We've gone out to eat and whatever. Anyway, so, listen, y'all. So, I went into the bathroom.
Came out and he was butt naked.
He was not butt naked, but... I walk out of the bathroom and I'm
was
like...
Was he in your drag?
He might as well have been. He was laid on the bed, y'all, sideways, like with his feet up, like curled behind him, looking all prim and proper. And like sort of just like very womanly, like just like laying there with his feet spread out and like propped up on a pillow. And I walked out, bitch, if you had seen my face, I am sure that he knew right then and there that it was a done deal. He sure was, I'm telling you, Pearl, like this. Like, caressing his face. I was like, what the fuck is happening here? I was devastated. And he had told me that he was a top. And I was like, oh, no, ma'am.
No, she's not.
Oh, girl, no.
Maybe she was a blouse, girl. Maybe she was a blouse. A power blouse.
A power blouse. Y'all, I hope y'all know what a blouse is. It's a feminine top. It's like, it's frilly and...
There is nothing wrong with a little blouse. I have friends that are blouses, girl. You do what you do.
I don't mind it at all. Actually, like, I think it's kind of hot in a way because I find myself very attracted to guys who are, like, pretty or... I mean, like, there's a lot of things. So if you can do all that
so
and...
So like pretty men...
I like a lot of different kinds of men, Pearl, but I find myself very drawn to men who, like, look pretty. Like, for example, before she became my daughter, I mean, Syndra is gorgeous, but she's very pretty.
She's pretty, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that, she's like, pretty. So there's the thing.
Well, I couldn't be attracted to her. Anytime she opens her mouth, I'm just like, girl, no.
I know.
Vagina's shut, closed, and sewn up, and girl, yeah, gone away.
My daughter Syndra is a beautiful boy, a beautiful girl, but you know what?
When she opens her mouth, Jocelyn Hernandez comes right out.
I can only imagine that, like, being in bed with her is like sucking Charo's dick.
Coochie Coochie is only for money. Coochie Coochie, show me the way to the bank.
She's like, God. Oh, hi, Coochie Coochie, yay, yay, yay. But not know, that girl. Mother thinks about those things, Sandra dear, but
Ew. It's
just like, whatever. Anyway, I'm drawn to like a pretty, sometimes very pretty men like that. So if you can do all that and lay down the D, then good for you, bitch. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do think that I would have I've never really bottomed for one of those boys because there's like the thought of, you know, right. like.
Take it, bitch.
Yes. Oh, my God.
You like that dick.
Oh, yeah. You like that, don't you? Okay.
So, wait. Did you kick him out or what?
I graciously suggested that we leave and go out to the Castro. And then when we got over there, I was like, oh, my stomach's not well. And I
girl, you yep. are shady.
Yeah. Poor thing. I mean, I should have known, like...
That's wonderful.
I should have known when he first asked me out that it just wasn't going to work because he was wearing penny loafers.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. Since this is a sex episode, before we... but Pearl, do you want to hear a horrifying story?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I want to preface this, you guys, by saying that there is strong language involved in this.
Ring the alarm.
And I might need to ring the alarm. There's some strong language and things that went in the setting of that situation mortified me then. And it makes a hilarious story, but you'll understand why I'm forewarning you. So many years ago, I was in Palm Springs with one of my friends, and we were staying in a hotel room together, and he had driven us down there. So I was in this hotel, and I was sort of, like, trapped there by myself with this guy, my friend. And we were roommates at the time. So it was so long ago, y'all, that I went on gay.com to chat with people, right? So mm-hmm. I'm chatting with guys on gay.com, and this one very, very handsome man, I was, like, in my early 30s. He was in his mid-40s, so he was older.
Like 20 years ago.
But very, whatever, bitch. very handsome. Very dark skin. So in his profile said that he was black. I was like, oh, you know, whatever. Send me a picture. He's very good looking. And then he's like, do you want to get together? This is all on instant message, y'all. Do you want to get together? I'm like, sure, mm-hmm. but I'm here with my friend. I have no car. You would have to pick me up. And by the way, y'all, I do not recommend this for people now because it sounds dangerous as fuck to me when I'm reciting this story because...
Well, I mean, now we have Lyft and things.
Right. At that time, there was nothing like that.
Right.
So... Yes, like, he came and picked me up in his brand new pickup truck, so he picks me up, and I get in, and I'm like, hello, and then I notice he's not saying anything much.
Oh, really?
He's, like, barely saying anything, and then partway into when we're almost to his house, he starts talking more regularly, and I notice he has a deep, deep Indian accent. The stereotypical, like...
Okay, guy like Asian Indian.
Like, yes, Asian Indian. Like, the stereotype, he sounded like the guy who runs the convenience store on The Simpsons.
You are so terrible.
But that's why it's a stereotype. It's like, it's based in truth. The, hello, how are you doing? Type of thing. It's like, I'm sure that there's 1.3 billion Asian Indians in the world. I'm sure that they find that a very appealing accent. To me, not one of the more sexy sounding accents. Spanish accent, sexy. French accent,
you know,
Australian. It's a little...
You don't like an Australian accent?
I do like... Those are all sexy to me. Asian, Indian, not sexy.
Really?
Like, hello?
No, not coming from you, girl. But I mean, it can be, I think. It's just... It's okay. It's gotta be the right... You know,
so,
whatever.
Anyway, so but the guy is very handsome and super nice. So we get to his house. We took
But homeboy said he was black.
Right. But... From
he's
India,
just black, but he's from India.
Black,
okay. Got
right.
it, got it, got it, got
but,
it.
But, you know, just like you can be British and black or
yeah, exactly.
wherever. Like my ex-boyfriend, Brazilian and black.
That's interesting. I would love to see...
He was very attractive.
That's kind of cool. Anyway.
So anyway, we take a shower and then we're like starting to get down to business. Uh-huh. And, you know, and like we're messing around. You guys, this is where it's about to get offensive.
Girl, you did what?
Wait.
Oh, girl. I think I already know what happened.
No, girl, you don't because it was... Just wait for it, bitches. So, we're naked and we're starting to mess around. And I start to go down on him, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm getting ready. And he says to me, oh, yes. Suck that big nigga dick.
Oh, my God. Girl.
I was mortified and started laughing.
Oh, you laughed. I would have got up and left.
Well, hold on. So I started laughing and he's like, what's wrong? What's, you know, what happened? And so I had to say to him, I am very attracted to men outside of my race, but I do not participate sexually in race play.
Right. N-word is not okay.
Right. And if somebody from the United States who says the N-word, people from the United States say it, I would have still been turned off. But when you pronounce it that way, it was so absurd. And, you know, I told, after, like, not long after I met Cookie Dough, our dearly departed friend, I told her this story, and she thought that fucking thing story was so funny. I thought she was going to choke to death on the spot. She could not breathe. She was wheezing. She was red. Anyway, it's become an infamous story among my friends because you guys...
That's traumatic, girl. So how'd you get up out of there?
I had to say to him, like...
That's not okay.
I don't participate in that. I don't ever use that word. I don't like that. And this moment has passed.
Right.
Like, I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm offended. Can you please take me home now?
Right. Like,
but he was so nice. He really was. And, you know, he worked for tech support, so I got to call and have my computer fixed. I'm just kidding. That's...
Oh, my God. You are such a bitch. I really believed you for like 2 seconds.
She totally believed that. No, he was so fucking nice. And like I said, very attractive. Like, and even with the accent part, like, if, you know, if you're kind of keeping it quiet and whatever when you're doing the deed, it doesn't matter. But when he went to the race play thing and...
Girl.
And by the way, I've had other... incidences of people who are not from the United States, who are darker, want me to use the N-word as like part of sex.
Girl.
And
people are so trashy.
I was like, no, like I can't. The person said, well, I'm not from the U.S., so it doesn't mean anything.
What do you mean? That doesn't... on my nerve.
He said it doesn't mean anything to me. And I do get what he's saying because he doesn't have the... emotional attachment or baggage that word carries, but I am.
Right.
And I can't. Like, I...
You know better, girl.
Girl, I mean, even when I hear kids, like, these days, like, saying it, like, nonstop on the bus, it makes me crazy just because I grew up in a generation where it's just not cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a word that is not okay.
Anyway,
so, yeah, that was my infamous Niga Deek story, and,
terrible.
It was fucking traumatic, girl.
Well, I mean, if the sex story isn't traumatic, but what happens afterwards is, there was this guy a long time ago, I probably was like 21.
Moving the microphone so we can really hear this bitch.
I was 21, dating this guy who said he was a cop and all this other stuff. Nothing really came from it. You know, dated, had fun, whatever. Recently, maybe about a month ago, saw on Facebook someone had posted this article with his picture on it. And it said that it said homeboy's name is Doug. Doug was arrested for having been caught with child pornography in his house.
Oh, damn. I think I saw this on Facebook, too.
He used to always hang outside of Badlands. And
oh, my God, girl.
I thought he was just working with security or something there. Crazy.
Well, you must have looked hella young then.
I looked like 12.
Yeah, my drag mother, Landa...
And it's so creepy to think about it now, like...
Uh-huh. Right, well, I mean, that's the thing. My drag mother, Landa, when she was very young, like, when she was still underage, living at home in Oklahoma, she used to get in drag, and that would allow them to sneak into the clubs and stuff, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Very common. But she was literally 15, 16 years old, a teenager.
Oh, Jesus.
And she, during that time, dated a number of men who were... a fair amount older than her, right? Mm-hmm. And she was telling me this story, and God, I hope my mother doesn't get pissed off about this. I don't think so. But she was looking through some photos, not, like, maybe 6 or 8 months ago, something like that, and came across some really old photos of her when she was that age, and she looks so young. She said it was very shocking and jarring to her because she recognized that basically the guys that were dating her were pedophiles, you know what I mean? Because, you know, she was very young, but she looked even younger. And then even when she was in her late teens and early 20s, she still looked very young. So these guys who were attracted to her were obviously people who were kind of, like, really harboring some kind of, I don't know. And that is, that's got to be creepy to think, like...
Yeah, someone that you dated, girl. Is like,
I mean, poor thing.
Yeah.
I meant the guy who was dating you.
Fuck you, oh my bitch. God,
poor thing, bitch. No wonder he had to, like, turn to child pornography.
Yeah, he...
You traumatized him so badly.
Someone who was into child porn, and I turned out to be a woman, so...
Oh, well.
It wasn't gonna happen.
That nothing came of this situation. So, I don't know. I have so many, like...
I've got some terror stories, girl.
I got so many jarring sex stories. So many, like, ridiculous...
You know what? This... Oh, my God. Okay, so... Was sleeping with homeboy. He, the first time, he actually stopped in the middle and, he said, he was like, okay, hold on, I have to go pee, unless you're thirsty. And I was like, what? And he was like, I have to pee unless you're thirsty. And I was like, nope, you better go take your ass to the motherfucking bathroom, because that is not happening here.
Oh my God.
Nope.
And then when he came back, he offered her a lollipop, a diaper.
Yeah, and some baby wipes.
And a bonnet. He's like, could you please put these on?
Right.
He's like, I want to have sex with you while you're sucking on this pacifier. Oh,
girl,
oh Lord.
I just can't.
Yeah,
And I'm not shaming anyone who's into golden showers and things. It's just not my
Well, girl, that's the thing. Like, you know, there's a lot of things that I'm just not into, and I don't think there's anything wrong with them, but it's just like, yeah, that's just not my cup of tea, bitch.
No.
Or in this case, not your cup of pee, bitch.
No. Oh, you're right.
So speaking of which, how is the tea that I just made you guys? I made her some tea, and it's like, I have started making...
I'm hoping that it's like a diet tea or something, and which is why you gave it to me.
Well, no, girl, it's not a diet tea, but it's just like, there's no calories in the tea. Just, you've tasted it, right?
Yeah, it's very like, it's very, like, vanilla-y.
It's chai mixed with chocolate tea.
Okay, that's what it is.
And so it's, like, it's this really delish combination.
I'm more of, like, a floral kind of girl.
Oh, girl, I should have got you floral teas. Oh, yeah. Well. That's her other daughter, floral teas.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you guys, last week, I got a text message, a couple of text messages, being like, you with your cliffhangers not telling us what's going on.
Oh,
blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So,
oh, are you about to spill the scoop?
Like on a low key level. I'm not mentioning any names or whatever, outing people, but I do want to give the listeners who are aware of the fact that I was like, we were in turmoil last week, information. Pearl's like, yes,
I'm so excited, bitch.
So this is what happened, everyone. On Monday afternoon, I was en route to my party at Lookout, when all of a sudden I got, this was a week ago Monday, you guys, I got a phone call from a friend of mine who had heard from a friend of hers who had heard from a friend of his. So if that makes sense, this is like
a friend of a friend.
A friend of a friend. That someone
who
everybody here in the community kind of knows and had started discussing openly the possibility that my show at the cafe, the Glamazone, would be ending, not just ending in general, but ending specifically last Sunday, this past week. He was like, oh, this is the last one. They're just going to whatever. And so this is the backstory for you guys. I've already talked to the management for a number of months about the idea of possibly phasing my show out probably towards the end of summer.
And we're talking about the Glamazone, you guys.
Yeah, we're talking about the Glamazone, not this podcast or anything like that. We're talking about my weekly drag show at the cafe. We have been discussing the prospect of phasing it out for a number of different reasons. But this, there's another individual who, this is like vague book posting, because I'm not going to say anybody's names, but people close to it may or may not pick up on it or whatever. There's an individual who I really believe strongly wants to replace me on Sunday nights at the cafe. And as part of like that, he's already like planning things, like as opposed to helping with me promoting the show and making sure it's a success, he's planning his own events or whatever. But the problem I really have is the fact that any of this conversation that I'm telling you about now one of the reasons I'm talking about it is because now, like, the rumor has already spread. It's out there. So I might as well just tell you my side or the truth as I see it. It's something that is private business between an employer and an employee, between a company and a show producer. This is my financial information. This is, like, my private professional business that somebody's, like, got loose lips and starting all kinds of gossip about. Is my show at the cafe going to ultimately, probably by the end of summer, be discontinuing? Yes. As I told Pearl, part of me is, like, sad about that. I'm not distraught about the fact that the show is going to go away. I'm sad because of the personal relationships that I built with the cafe. I do not have immediate plans to be working with them, so I really love the people at the cafe. I really love that the atmosphere that the girls and I produce each week when we get together. The atmosphere of my dressing room, in my opinion, is one of the best dressing rooms I've ever been in. The congeniality, the level of love and support that the girls show for each other, the fact that so many people have come out of this show over the last 7 years, that they are truly like a sisterhood. They've all known each other. And so all of those elements make me sad, but the idea of the show not continuing itself kind of doesn't make me sad because I've been doing it for almost 7 years. Mm-hmm. It is time for me to look at other options. And I've got some things in the work that I would like to, you know, see happening beginning maybe in July or August. So those are all things that are coming about. But it was very unsettling to think that a company that I have been with would just almost 7 years would just be like, by the way, this is it. Now, in defense of the cafe, that is not the plan at all. That was never their plan. In fact, a lot of people were really upset to hear that people even loosely associated with what's going on there would be saying this stuff. And to the management and staff of the cafe in general, like, I adore you. You guys have treated me and all of the girls that we've brought in over the years like incredible rock stars. They've given us rock star treatment. They've treated us so beautifully. And that's one of the things that had me so upset, thinking that after all this time, like, that I would just be, like, kicked to the curb.
Right.
And that is not what's happening. But it was very depressing. It was like I went through it over the weekend. And finally, as opposed to just sitting, like, basically in my own shit and everything, like, thinking about this, I just went to my manager and was like, look, this is what I've heard. Is this true? And thankfully, he was like, no, that's not true. But by then, it had taken such an emotional toll on me that the entire weekend was just, I was kind of distraught. I was a little bit beside myself all weekend. My mind was racing in all these directions. And because when you, like I said, this is something that I'm totally on board with. Like, we've talked about it for several months. We just are looking for the appropriate way and dates and everything to phase it out. Which doesn't mean I want you guys to stop coming. I want you to keep coming because, like, the girl, you know, we've only got a little bit more time together. But I also am putting together my exit strategy. And I'd like to think that somebody would be like, by the way, you're done. He'd be like, before we can get everything else set up, would suck. So that's the tea, you guys. And, you know, the interesting thing that I think about this situation is that the person where the rumor started, the source of the rumor, is scrambling, trying to figure out who might have mentioned this to me, because, which is a sign that if you can't pinpoint where the leak is, there's been a lot of leaks. You've been talking to a lot of people, apparently, about some bullshit you shouldn't have been talking about.
It's a mess.
Because people have come to me saying, did so-and-so tell you this, or did so-and-so tell you? And I'm like, actually, no. Like, people have guessed all kinds of people, and none of those are the actual individuals who told me. So, girl, there's so many people who know this. And Landa, my drag mother, said that Sable Jones asked her. I was like, now, how the hell did, like, where the hell did Sable get that? Like,
shit.
Girl, everybody in town's talking, so.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so that's what had me down, you guys. And that's what kind of really had me twisted last week. And
so you guys now have a new, you don't have a date.
We don't have a date. We're looking probably
the
end of summer, probably like August, mid August, something along that lines. We'll be.
What are you going to do? You should do something big,
right? That's the idea that we've had all along, is that we're going to set a date together. This coming week, I'll be meeting with my management. We'll set a date, and then we will begin planning backwards from that date. Like, I want to have one more new talent showcase to give the girls one more thing. I want to put together, like, maybe we did a super show a couple years ago from one of the anniversaries where, like, every girl comes in and does one number, and it's like, you know, 15 of our favorite performers. It just would be epic for us, and that way we can go out as a family, the way we've done this whole thing all along.
Right. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is always, my name's on this show. I'm the one who produces or whatever, but I feel like, or I hope that I've always treated it like a family atmosphere. Like, those are my children. Like, whether they're my children or not, like, I'm kind of, at worst case scenario, I'm like that person who lives in the neighborhood who all the kids go to their house and they, like, you know... Don't matter who your mom is when you come here, like, I'm your mom while you're between these walls, or at least auntie or whoever. You know, that's how I feel. And for me to think that so many of the girls who've gotten their start at this show have gone on to get their own shows or...
Just do other things, you know.
Big, like, win pageants and all of this stuff, like, makes me feel great because no matter what, like... If you do a show, that's great. Like, you do something that's long-running and people enjoy it, that's fantastic. But the real impact is, like, what have we put out in the community that's going to keep moving forward? Well, this new talent showcase that I would like to plan will be number 18, you guys. So that means that if you figure out of 18, there's probably minimum of 8 competitors in each one. You're talking a couple hundred people who've been through these things.
Right. And 8 is, like, a small number. I think the one I competed in was, there was, like...
13, 14 people?
I have the list, girl.
Yeah. They're, like, most of them, I tried to have 10 competitors in each one. The least number of competitors we had is the time that Ms. Palou won. I think that there were 8 in her contest. So...
There were 13 in mine.
Right.
Oh, no, 12 in mine.
Right. So that's, like, pretty standard. And so we've done 17 of those so far. So you're looking at 150, 200 girls, pretty much, that have come through these. And the thought that young performers have gotten their first, some of them their very first performance ever on that stage with us is, that's really enriching. It, like, it makes a person feel good. It makes me feel good, you know, it makes me feel like people have gotten opportunities and girls who may not have ever gotten a start. It's sometimes it's really hard to break onto a stage somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
It is.
And I have always offered girls that. And not just the winners of the contest. Like, sometimes the winners of the contest we never see or hear from again, pretty much.
Right.
It's like the girls who do the show and impress me. I'm like, I walk right to the back and I'll tell people, like, whether you win or not, you're coming back. I want you in the show. I love the way you are. Like, you know, whatever. So, yeah. So, anyway, you guys, that's what had us down last week. And even Pearl was, like, kind of fucked up about it, thinking, like...
I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Shady.
Yeah, it was. It was shady. And I warned some people who do close business with certain people involved in this scenario that you have to look at this situation as somebody's business practices. You know, like, if they're, like, being sneaky and underhanded and trying to, like, steal things out from underneath someone or... doing things which they should know could potentially undermine somebody's success. Like, you start spreading around that somebody's like, this is it, whatever. People think of things in a very different way or treat you in a different way. So if they're willing to do that just randomly, like, honey, my experience has been that there's very few people who will do something to other people that they won't turn around and do right to you some point. So, all right, you guys, we're going to take a break. We're 30 minutes into this week's podcast. Remember, we've got Stan Zimmerman later with us.
And we still have our recap to go through.
We sure do, honey. We haven't even got to this week's episode of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, we.
So, all that and more on episode 69 of Party Foul Radio. I'm Poya Delmar.
And I'm Pearl T.
We'll be back in a minute.
Oh, she really came that way?
All right.
My name is Alyssa Edwards.
All right.
I'm known as the Vanessa Williams of drag.
Alright.
I am here to show people I still got it.
I need to
get up in this gig, girl.
My name is Alyssa Edwards, and this is Party Styles Radio.
I don't get cute, I get drop dead gorgeous.
All right, everybody, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I am Poyo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
Oh, excuse me, girl.
What was that?
It was like a little burp. Sorry, y'alls. Anyway, there's a few things that I want to give shout-outs to this week. So we know that you spend a couple hours each week with us, and you have plenty of time during the rest of the week to look up things on the internet and listen to other podcasts and whatnot. So first thing, Pearl and I both make cameo appearances, albeit very brief, in the new video for Kim Sims, and her new single is called Turn It Up, and you can go check that out on YouTube. Shout out to Kim Sims, Thomas Arambula, LP Vargas,
Jose Guzman,
Cologne, who directed the video, and many more affiliated with that project. Go look up Kim Sims, that's K-Y-M-S-I-M-S, and her song Turn It Up. Check out the music videos. Support the artists who support us, y'all. So
right.
That is a definite must, because if we don't support our own, how can we expect anybody to support us?
Right.
Also, another friend of the podcast who has been on in the past, my friend Sherry Shaw, has just released a new single. Also, it is called Sober. It is under her band name. Her group name is Staria. S-S...
Oh, right. Staria.
Yes. S-S-T-A-R-I-A. Staria. And the song is called Sober, so go look her up, because Sherry and I met a while back. I did an interview with her for the Huffington Post, and then we had her on the podcast. She has long been affiliated with writing intro themes for professional wrestlers. That's how, like, part of what she did. And she is now out on her own as a solo artist, making her own music. And she's very good friends with Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins. And that's how, and he's very involved in professional wrestling now. So it's like a 6 degrees of separation thing. So go support, look up Sherry's video for Sober, you guys. I know we got fans from around the world
mm-hmm.
who can go and watch her video. Show some love to Kim and Sherry. And I do want to give a very special thank you to Sherry in particular, because she helped me live one of my dreams this past week. A while back, do you guys remember I wrote this article for the Huffington Post called How I Grappled with Internalized Homophobia to Live My Pro Wrestling Dreams? What, Pearl?
You know, nothing. I just, you know, there's a lot of gays out there that are going through this.
Well, I, you know, this is basically the overview of the article, guys, and I would encourage you to Google it. How I Grappled with My Internalized Homophobia to Live My Pro Wrestling Dreams is that... Basically, as a child, I loved pro wrestling and I wanted to get involved. But of course, it doesn't matter whether you're gay, straight,
uh-huh.
it could be your religion or ethnic background, whatever it is. People tell you things about who you are.
Right.
And then you believe them as a result of, you know, you trust them. You trust that grown-ups know or whatever. And people present information about yourself. And if you take it in as fact... It can guide and affect the way that you live your life going forward. And as a young gay man, I loved pro wrestling, but it became very apparent to me from the messaging that society gave me that gay people in general are not welcome in the world of professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of didn't get involved. Well, of course, as you know, more recently with Wrestling for Charity and my friends Butch Hoff and the men and women at Wrestling for Charity, Donovan Troy, Kikyo the Fallen Flower, who's been on our podcast, you know, I have been embraced in that world in a way that I would not have expected. And as a result of writing this article for the Huffington Post, where I mentioned the very first wrestling match I ever saw was a professional wrestler named the International Heartthrob, Austin Idol, and he was sexy and handsome and blonde and wore feather boas, and I just thought he was the bomb. So, as it turns out, Sherry sent my article to Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins. He read it, loved the article, and then he forwarded that article on to Austin Idol himself, the wrestler who I mentioned. And this week, I appeared on Austin Idol's podcast talking about my longtime love of professional wrestling and the obstacles and challenges of being a... you know, a drag performer and a gay man who is interested in the world of professional wrestling. And it's much more than just about professional wrestling, you guys. Of course, a lot of it does focus on that, but if you, it has themes that are universal. So I think that if you guys want to check it out, you can go to Austin Idol Pod, as in short for podcast. So AustinIdolPod.com and check it out. I'm on the most recent episode. So thank you, Austin Idol and the great Brian Last, for having me on as your guest. And, you know, they've had some wrestling legends on that show, so I feel in very good company.
All right.
So been very active. That's a recap of my week, you guys. Pearl, what's been going on with you, girl? We skipped over all this right away by jumping into some sex stories, so.
Right.
Bring the bitches up to speed.
I don't know. What did I do last week? I went out to support my homegirl, Michaela Kendrick, for Katy Perry night.
Michaela Kendrick? Meaning, yes. Mickey Monroe.
Yes. And you were over at Katy Perry night also.
Well, I spent all weekend with Michaela,
right?
With Mickey, so we did brunch and then the Katy Perry night on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
Morning and night, we were together on Saturday, and then she did my show on Sunday too. So, which you were in?
Yeah, and then I did that on Sunday, and girl, my first wardrobe malfunction.
Oh my God, you guys!
I never again. I think I'm just. I found a way to fix that. If you, for those of you that were there, don't worry about it. It wasn't.
I have the video.
Do you really?
Yes.
Oh God.
So you guys, so Pearl comes out and, you know, she likes to wear some skimpy things here and there.
It
so
wasn't really a skimpy outfit though.
It wasn't. It was kind of like a bathing suit with like, kind of, yeah, you know, big shoulder pads or whatever. And she's performing and all of a sudden I see the cooch gave loose, y'all. Her right. Cooch popped.
All you ladies pop your pussy like this. Shake your body, don't stop, don't miss. All you ladies pop your pussy like this.
She was pussy popping in all a different direction.
Right.
And it, of course, it popped up. And so then people were like, I was in the DJ booth when I saw it happen. And people swooped up. She was like trying to back it up on people so they could right. snap it together or whatever. But it wasn't. So finally, I just ran. And she was like trying to stand in place. And I just ran and reached up under her cooch, you guys, and tied a fucking knot underneath
Thank
her crotch.
Thank God, girl. I was like, how the fuck am I going to do this? I was, girl, not living.
I did not live, bitch. As it turns out, you guys, the funniest part to me was right when the song started, she was performing Fuck You Better by Neon Hitch, who we have had on the podcast right. as well. I'm friends with Neon. I was in one of her music videos and stuff. So I'm like, oh my God, like Felix, I said to Pearl's partner, like, Felix, get a the video of this and I'll send it to Neon. So, uh-huh. you know, she would love it. She loves drag queens. So of course it was all being recorded and there Pearl's cooch gets loose. Girl.
Right. Girl, never again. I definitely learned my lesson, girl, not going to happen again. So that was, other than that, the show was fabulous.
Yeah, that was quite a funny one.
Other than that, I had some of my real friends over.
Oh my God, girl.
And
the real friends.
Right. And they cooked me a fabulous dinner. And we had a little sleepover. It was cute.
Aw.
Other than that, I've just been getting ready for Seattle this weekend. I have my step down. I'm passing my crown, Miss Nubian Pride Queen, down to a new girl. And I'm very excited to bring up that I'm bringing up some girls from San Francisco to compete.
There's, so. Yeah, you said last week, you said that Malay Balenciaga and Sable Jones are both doing it.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
I actually talked to the promoters out there, and they said that they've been contacted. This is really cool. They said that they were contacted, one, by a couple other trans women that were interested in pageantry, and they didn't know trans women could enter the pageant, so.
So
now,
you set the bar for them and
yeah,
let
so
them
know.
Yeah,
so now they're interested in doing the pageant. And then I know personally a few other girls out here that want to do the pageant, and the pageant is talking about having prelims to making it more of a national pageant.
Oh, very nice.
But it's
y'all,
like
I've decided not to do it. I'm not going to compete.
Shut up, girl. Whatever. More like she'd be there to scope out
men's,
anyway.
Bitch. It's the truth.
So we'll see how that goes. I'm so excited. Getting ready for the step down. It'll be my first step down, so I'm putting together, like, I'm figuring out what my step down number is going to be and all that stuff.
That is terrific. Good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting because here we call it a step down, but other places call it a give up.
A give up. That sounds god awful.
Doesn't it sound so different? Like,
Who calls it a give up?
That is what they call it in the Miss United States pageant.
They call it a give up?
In Arkansas, it's like the give up. And like, I was like, it just says a very different thing. Like, right. You know, like, I don't know. Like,
I'd rather step down than give up, girl.
Yeah, exactly. They'd be like, oh, bitch, I give up.
Right.
Oh, I give up, girl. Oh, whatevs. So, anyway.
That is news to me.
Yeah, right. it was very... when I went there, I was like, why do they keep calling it a give up? And she's like, well, because I'm giving up the, you know, the title or whatever. And I was like...
On the West Coast, we call it a step down.
Yeah, like it's a step down where you know. So, anyway. Well, congratulations on that. Well, we look forward to next episode getting all the deets on the
step down. Won, yeah.
So she'll be reporting into us fresh from Seattle, y'all, which is going to be very good for us. And all right, are you guys ready to talk some RuPaul's Drag Race?
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, let's do this, y'all. We are going to recap who is eliminated in the first person eliminated from the top five of this season of RuPaul's Drag Race.
So happy.
Go, y'all. It's time. Spoiler alert, bitches. Spoilers. Spoiler alert. If you did not watch, this is your, like...
This is your time to fast forward, girl.
Yep. So, all right, you guys. On the most recent episode of RuPaul's Drag Race, what was the challenge?
The challenge was rainbow.
It was the three different look...
For Pride.
For Pride challenge.
So they had a look with... That had to include a rainbow. And then they had the...
One was the
sexy unicorn or something like that.
Yes, sexy unicorn.
And then...
The final one was...
The YMCA.
The YMCA.
Or
yes.
The village people. The YMCA.
So they had to choose... There was five of them, so they had to each pick a different member of the village people and reinterpret that look. So... For those of you who are not completely familiar, there was a construction worker, a cop, a Native American.
A leather daddy.
And then I'm trying to remember
A cowboy.
A cowboy. Right. Exactly. Thank you. I don't know how I forgot the cowboy because I've been trying to get the original cowboy from the Village People, Randy Jones, who is a friend of mine on the podcast. Wrestler?
He was the original.
Randy Jones?
Oh, I'm thinking somebody else.
You're thinking Randy Orton?
Maybe.
Randy Orton's fine as hell?
Yeah.
Yeah, girl. No, not him. Randy Jones is like one of the original Village People. By the way, I just want a side note before we go into this. A few years ago, I was working the main stage at California's Great America Pride Night, and we had the Village People come out and perform. So, number one, y'all have to remember, these men are old.
Oh.
Like... One of them literally had to sit on a stool the whole time because he had recently had his hips replaced. But, that's an aside. You know, age happens. They're legends. They're icons, especially in the LGBT community.
Right.
But can I tell you, they had the shittiest fucking attitudes. I was like, I'm the host. I was like the MC of this event. And I was like, I would love to get a picture with you. And the guys were like, could you hurry up? Our car is waiting for us or something. I was like...
Oh, queen.
This was the same year, by the way, that I also had. We had Iggy Azalea there, and she was actually super nice. So, it was Iggy Azalea, Havana Brown, the Village People, and the Village People were, like, the rudest of the whole bunch. I was like, oh, damn. Anyway, so, the first challenge up was the girls had to do their interpretation of rainbow. So, the girls come out. Trinity Taylor was first. What did you think of her? She had, like, a black outfit with, like, tiny little rainbow stripes to it or whatever.
I feel so... Like, the judges hated it.
The judges hated it.
But I really liked it.
I really liked it, too.
I honestly thought that was probably one of my favorite looks from all the girls. I kind of liked Peppermint's, but I just felt like Peppermint's was a onesie with a flag kind of draped all over it.
I did not like Peppermint's. I thought Peppermint's looked very basic. It was like, because it was just a pride flag basically draped over top of like a onesie.
Yeah.
I did not like it.
And then I felt like Shea Coulee's had nothing to do with the flag, but she looked gorgeous.
But she was the one who wore the graffiti print.
Yeah.
Which I loved, you guys. And they were like, that's not a rainbow. I was like, there's like 10 different colors on there.
Yeah.
I did think it could have been a little more colorful.
Right.
Even for graffiti, it was a little downplayed.
So it was on like a purple backdrop, like It was like violet or purple.
Like a lavender.
Yeah, and
color.
I think if that lavender was white with the colors on top of it, maybe that would have made more sense.
But I thought it looked really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I do not remember at all what Sasha wore in that challenge.
Sasha was really clever. She wore a little red pencil skirt, and she had, like, this hat on, and she took off her hat.
Oh, yes.
A little house.
Right. I do remember that now.
I thought that was so cute.
That was very clever. Alexis Michelle came out in, like, bell bottoms that was literally, like, rainbow stripes.
Yeah, it looked...
It looked like a costume. It looked like
something you could buy at, like, Party City or
party,
something.
It did. It looked like a Party City type of costume. Rainbow costume.
Yeah.
Then the next one was the sexy unicorn.
And where did these... So almost all these girls had, like, hooves. And I didn't know that was a thing.
I'm pretty sure that this was one of the challenges where they probably told you... Be prepared to be a unicorn.
Yeah, no, they definitely did, because...
Like, there's no fucking way that these bitches would have all had horns and hooves if they didn't know that they were going to do it. So,
I honestly feel like I liked all of them.
I honestly felt like I liked none of them.
You didn't like any of them?
I just thought it was really basic. I just didn't think...
I thought they were kind of cool.
I'm trying to remember the only one... I think that the only one that I might have liked, the one that I recall... liking to some degree was Trinity's.
Trinity's was cool.
Like, I think, and they said something like, it might not have been that great, but you sold the hell out of it. And I think that that's what I remember. She just sold the fuck out of that costume. She was like, whatever.
Right. I just felt like her hair was too much for her.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I think that that has been the case. Like, I'm getting ahead of myself. The next one, of course, they all have to do their interpretation of various ones. Trinity was the cop. And they loved her look.
I thought it was really cool. Yeah.
I thought that it was okay. In this one, I thought that that hair was way ridiculous. It reminded me, have you ever seen those hats where it's like, it's built to look like a visor with a guy with like spiky hair coming out of it? Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it looked like to me. And I was like, I couldn't get past it.
And, I don't know. It felt like a runway look to me. Like something you see like in Fashion Week or something, but with pageant hair. And,
I think that I would have liked it a lot better without the pageant hair, because part of the idea to me of the cop is that he's like sleek and sexy, and that that hair didn't look sleek or sexy.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, this is a situation where I think that almost if she had puffed up her own hair and sort of slicked it back, kind of like very... Mm-hmm. Annie Lennox-ish, almost. She could have sold the fuck out of that. Yeah. But they loved her look. Then, I'll tell you, the look that really did nothing, one of the looks that really, really did nothing for me is, and this one was Sasha's.
Like, which one?
When Sasha came out, remember, she was like...
Are we talking about the unicorns, or are we talking
I'm talking about the village people one.
Her cowboy look, I didn't like that either. It wasn't flattering. I get that it was,
I mean,
like
they,
some
they,
fashion.
Yeah, person. They said, that, but this is the thing, you guys. If you've watched the whole season, they'll read one girl for doing something and then praise the next girl for doing the exact same thing. Because they said a couple times, like, this is like maybe fashion, but this doesn't seem like drag or whatever. And I thought this... They said that about Alexis's look. Alexis was the Indian in this one, the Native American.
No, they said she was pedestrian, girl.
Right. But they also said that elements of her look were fashion, but it didn't read like drag. And I felt almost the same way about Sasha. It was like... It was a cute little look or whatever, but it felt... It didn't feel like drag to me. Mm-hmm. I mean... the difference, of course, is that Alexis's ended up looking like something you legit could have just bought at Ross or something.
It was awful.
And they clocked Alexis for having shake and go hair. Shake and go, by the way, means you pull it out of the bag, you shake it, you put it on your head, and you go. And that bow and arrow was like
stay up like that.
I thought it was a clever concept in theory, but in practice. Like,
she should have been able to look in the mirror and been like, this is not going to work.
If you're going to do something like that, sort of over the top on the top, like the rest of it has to sort of hold up.
Right.
Like, legit, at one point in the show, you guys, she had this giant dream catcher as an earring. And I'm like, if you're going to put a giant bow on your head, then, like, giant Dreamcatcher earrings might be something to think about. And, like, some other things.
Go big. You know, if you're going to go big with one, it, I don't know. It was just...
So, Peppermint looked incredible in her, like, leather man.
Yes, she did.
Wear. I mean, those were... And Shea Calais was... What?
The construction worker girl, that was everything.
Yes, I really, really like Shay's patchwork cape. I think that...
That was everything. I think I want to steal that. Like,
well, the whole look, you know, the, some of the girls were clocking her, but to me, it looked like fashion, and it was draggy, and it was like, it was right on the mark.
Right.
It, she did fantastic. Ultimately, wasn't it Shay that won?
Mm-hmm.
Shay wins.
Yeah.
Trinity is safe because they liked her stuff. Sasha is safe. And that leaves Alexis and Peppermint in the bottom two.
Right. And to, girl, let me just say, I would never want to have to lip sync against Peppermint.
Yeah. Peppermint slays a lip sync, honey. So the two of them lip sync. They're lip syncing to Macho Man by the Village People. And I was moderately, no, I was embarrassed for Alexis.
Girl.
It was not, you know, it just. It was
not a good look.
It was not the thing. And Peppermint is an outstanding performer. And she, girl, she was doing all this. She was killing the lip sync. She's trans woman. She's killing the Macho Man lip sync. Dresses a leather person.
Right.
And then, in the middle of all of it, still manages to work in the fucking dance from If by Janet Jackson.
Right,
she
girl,
served it
yes.
up. And I said, okay, bitch. And that's when I was just like, oh, this is bad news, girl. It is bad news. But I do think that, unfortunately for Alexis Michelle, by the time she went home last Friday, I think people were ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think that her... I think her support had been waning, we'll say.
My thing is, like, when RuPaul asked, like, who deserves to go home, she tried to give the excuse that nobody told her.
Yeah, that part bugged the fuck out of me, too. She was like, well, nobody said this or that. I was like...
Girl, it's a competition. Nobody got to tell you shit.
Right, and the fact is that, like, okay, the first time... Maybe you're disappointed, but you knew they didn't tell you then. So why do you think, like, all these weeks later?
And, it's a top five, bitch.
And once again, like, you guys know, the listeners out there know, we know here, that if you start critiquing somebody's, like, outfit, that begins to create conflict. I mean, they said some things about even Shay's cape that she made, that flannel cape. They're like, girl, I don't, whatever. And, you know, and it worked out, and it was gorgeous, and they were proven wrong, but... In the past, like, when people start to critique other girls, what they're wearing, and make suggestions, it always comes across as really bitchy. It never comes across as really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I think that, I don't know, part of me just thinks that, I'm wondering if Alexis has a really, I think that we've talked about this with other people. I don't think she has as clear of an understanding just yet of who Alexis Michelle is as a character, because I really think that one of the things that guides some of the other girls, Sasha and Shay, for example, both, and Trinity, to be honest, all three of them, who I believe will be the top three, all have a very strong understanding of what their aesthetic is and how to make things fit who they are.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you get three very distinct points of view.
Right.
And I don't know that Alexis has that. And I think that people have suggested that Peppermint doesn't have that either.
Right. Both of their styling is kind of not completely there yet. And it's... I feel like it just shows. It shows, and, you know, they need to polish that up, girl.
And when they asked Trinity, I didn't know who Trinity was going to say, but I was really surprised when they asked Trinity who should go home, and she said Peppermint, because she acknowledges that basically she's fixated on the idea of everything being very finished and polished, and she said that Peppermint doesn't seem there yet, which I thought was an honest answer from her perspective, and also somehow didn't seem offensive.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's like...
Right.
It's like, this is just something that, like, I personally fixate on, and so since I don't see it from her, like, I'm going with her. It somehow did not seem personal at all. It didn't seem personal at all.
Girl, she's amazing.
She is, and I think that we'll get to see... I will tell you that one of the things that stuck out to me about her this episode is they showed her a couple times, like, in the workroom, and she was wearing, like, a pair of jeans, and her body looked so bizarre because of all that pumping on her ass or whatever.
I love it, girl.
Of course you do, because you're a woman, but she's not, and it's like...
Right.
That is really awkward looking.
Well.
But girl, she lives for being able to do nothing but talk and not having to do anything except shave her legs, so.
I just think, going back to Alexis though, the only thing that I've liked from Alexis, besides Kris Jenner, is her promo look. Her promo look is amazing. It's really stunning. It's really like, it's where she should be. Other than that, I almost don't even remember anything else that she's worn.
Well,
for good reasons, anyway. You know what I mean?
I have been a strong supporter of her for a variety of reasons, some public and some private, throughout the course of this season. And I will say that by this episode, I felt that it was the right person to go home, mm-hmm. the right time for her to go home. A couple of weeks ago, when she was in the bottom two, I was, like, clutching the pearls, hoping that she didn't get sent home. This week, I was just like...
Girl, it's time to go.
Yeah. I mean, even before the lip sync, I felt that Peppermint should be moving on.
Right.
Because what I see from Peppermint is I do see some change every week.
Yeah.
Some growth every week. And with Alexis, I think that... At this point in the competition, she had hit a place of stagnance. I hope that going forward, she will, at this point, she'll be challenging herself. And I think that this can light a fire under her. And I think that there's incredible things to come from her, probably. But I think that in terms of the competition, it was the right time.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like there were plenty of other queens I would have rather see what they had in their closets. Than what Alexis had.
Right. Well, I mean...
But it is what it is, girl.
It is what it is, and things play out the way they play out. And, mm-hmm. you know, congratulations to Alexis Michelle for making it to the top five. Congratulations on, you know, your continued success. And, girl, the bright side is now you can actually be... You'll be making enough money that you can pay somebody to go on tour with you to tell you when your clothing is pedestrian, bitch.
Right. So now you have a legitimate reason to be upset for someone not telling you, girl.
Exactly. Yeah, so that is our episode recap for this episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. Next week, one person's heart is going to break, bitch, because they are going to just miss being top three.
Girl, I would be devastated.
I think, yeah, I think it would be possibly easier to be eliminated, like, maybe sixth or seventh.
Right.
Than be, like...
At the top five.
Make it into the top five and then not go to the top three. That would be... Ooh, girl, it'd be, like, heartbreaking.
Right.
That is pretty heart-wrenching. So, we will be tuning in on Friday, bitch, to see who it is.
Right.
My strong guess is that as much as I really love Peppermint before the show and now even more so after the show, I feel like... Sasha, Shay, and Trinity are our top three this year.
You never know, because, I mean, whoever is in the bottom with her is really going to have to bring it for that lip sync,
bitch.
Girl.
I think that of the four of them, if Peppermint is not going to make it into the top three, the only person I can see beating her in a lip sync is Trinity.
Yeah.
Because
Shay's good too, but she's not as good as Trinity.
Shay is good. She's not bad at all. But Peppermint is really, really good.
Right.
And Trinity is really, really good.
Yeah.
So it could become one of those things where they could justify, like, this is almost a toss-up for this. But mm-hmm. we think that, you know...
This is the clear front-runner.
She's more of a front-runner. We want to see where she goes.
Mm-hmm.
But... Having not even been revealed as transgender when the season started, now we've got our first top four transgender finalists.
Right, right. And we have our first pageant queen in the top.
No, we haven't. Ginger was top three also.
Oh, you're right. I keep forgetting she's a pageant queen. You're right.
So.
Oh, Alexis Mateo also.
Yes. But, so, we've had them before, but definitely, you know, I think that Trinity is, I think that Trinity's an even more clear version of that.
Yeah.
Alexis Mateo and Alexis Michelle remind me a lot of each other in terms of, like, I think that there's, I don't know. I think there's maybe. Except I definitely think that Alexis Michelle has a better shape, body shape, than Alexis Mateo, but...
I don't know, because have you seen Alexis Mateo recently?
No.
She's beautiful. She's the current, and I've only seen her because...
Isn't she the Continental? No, Entertainer of the Year.
No, she's the current reigning All-American Goddess.
Oh, yes. I'm like, girl, I went through every pageant I could think of.
Right. And she looks... I was never a huge Alexis fan, but she looks stunning now. She stepped her game up, girl, continued to grow, and she looks so good.
Well, I mean, I think that's key, you know? People act like getting on Drag Race is, like, the finish line, but, bitch, it is the starting line.
Right.
If you're smart about it, like, it is the launching pad for you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you guys, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to have with us Stan Zimmerman talking about his new Telefilms project, Sex and Execs, as well as what it was like to write for the Golden Girls. All that and much more on this episode of Party Foul Radio.
Hallelujah, this is Shangela, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Toyo and Pearl, honey. Hallelujah.
Clock the bag.
Clock the bag.
Clock the shoe.
Clock the shoe.
Now punch the clock. It's time to work, 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 work.
Welcome back to more Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Ms. Poya Del Mar, and we are excited to have with us at this time screenwriter Stan Zimmerman. Stan got his professional start right out of college as a regular writer for The Golden Girls and went on to write for such shows as The Gilmore Girls and much more. Stan is currently returned to screenwriting as well as directing on the new Telefilms project, Sex and Execs. To find out more about Sex and Execs and all Telefilm projects, which are geared towards the lesbian community, visit telofilms.com. That's TELOFILMS.com. And now, please welcome to Party Foul Radio, Stan Zimmerman, everyone. Thank you for talking to me today.
I'm thrilled to talk to you today. Are you in Ohio?
I'm not in Ohio. I'm in San Francisco.
Oh, look at you.
Wait, why did you think I was in Ohio?
Did it send it on your Facebook?
That's where I went to college, so.
Oh, okay.
I've lived in San Francisco for, God, almost 20 years.
Oh, I had a whole other story going on in my head.
Really?
Yes.
Well, if anybody's going to write
a good one.
If anybody's going to write a different story for me, I'd prefer it be you than many other people.
Okay. Can I set it in Ohio?
You can set it in Ohio. You can set it wherever. I mean, I just know that you've worked on productions that I've watched, like, my whole life. So, you know, such as Golden Girls.
Cool.
I definitely want to talk to you about the work that you've been doing recently. You've always done really smart, intelligent writing for women on the series that you have worked with in the past, like Golden Girls and Gilmore Girls. And I was wondering how it is that you came to be connected with Telefilms, which is doing work largely for the lesbian community.
I met Kristen Baker, who created Telefilms and runs it, through my friend Elizabeth Keener. And I think we met at the Abbey, actually. Years ago, and she was still living in Chicago at the time, and she interviewed me for some video project, and then when she started Telefilms, I was just really interested in what she was doing. She was actually the only person creating lesbian content strictly online, and I had this script that Jim Berg and I had written called Skirt Chasers on spec, and we had put it out the year that they did The New Normal, remember the show with Andrew Reynolds?
Right.
And at the time, and they still say this, the networks really only allow one gay project a year. It's an unwritten rule. And we were told, you know, great characters, so funny, we've never seen this relationship, but we have our gay show. And it was so frustrating for us, we didn't quite understand it. And so then I kind of had a brainstorm, and I called Elizabeth and I said, would you read this script? I think you'd be great in it. And she read it and loved it. And we gave it to Kristen, and Kristen approve us to make it. We got to make it ourselves. And that's exactly what we did. And it was kind of, we cut the pilot into 6 episodes. And it's kind of a new way of making a pilot. But the Wild West out there. And it's a way for us to get the material out there and either, you know, remake it with, you know, a network, you know, being either one of the major networks, or it could be a Hulu or Netflix or Amazon kind of place.
Yeah, it seems like actually so many people are already moving away from network television anyway, that and finding their content, whether it's on YouTube or other places, that the internet is really opening up a tremendous number of opportunities for people to get their work out there in ways that we wouldn't have imagined even 10 years ago.
Yeah, and even before that, when you think about when I started with Golden Girls, you know, there were 3 networks and then 4 with Fox. And if those places passed on a project, it was dead. And I never understood that, because with movies, they'd go into turnaround or different studios would buy them. And I said, well, why is it different with TV projects? If the script is good, it's good. Why can't you just find another home for it? But it was always like, you know, rotted fish or something. It was like no one would ever look at an old pilot. Luckily, now that it's changed. And it's also having worked so many years in network television, and you're, you know, it's a constant battle, and you're getting network notes and sometimes throwing scripts out literally that day and having to rewrite them that night. There's such joy and pleasure, I think, in the artistic community that we can just kind of get more of our own vision out there, and it's less cooks telling you what to do, and that's really exciting as a writer and director. And also, Kristen gave me an opportunity to direct finally on film. I had only directed one music video, actually, for a group called Horse Mascara, and we shot it at the Cock in New York. And also Laverne Cox was actually an extra dancer in the piece.
Wow.
Laverne Cox was Laverne Cox. How do you like that? So that was my only time filming. I had directed some stage, a lot of stage. I'm doing a lot more of that now. But, you know, here was a chance for me to practice and learn how to direct on film. Right? You know, on a sitcom, I was always the person as a showrunner writer sitting with the director and helping them in editing, but I was not being able to get a chance to direct. Even though I went and shadowed on 14 different sitcoms, which means you follow the director around for the whole week, but no one would take a chance with me because it's, I don't know why. I really don't know why to this day. And I hope that I can do, you know, a big network show one day, too.
Well, you actually direct all 6 webisodes of Sex and Execs.
Sex and Execs. So after Skirt Chasers, Chris and I just had a great time together. And she said, you know, I have to have your next project. So Jim and I sent her a few different ideas that we had. And this scripts for Sex and Execs, we had actually sold to Lifetime as 2 separate half hours. At that time, it was called Suits and Skirts, but I think Sex and Execs is a much better title. And we sold them as 2 separate half hours, thinking they could make up an hour block, or if one of the pilots didn't work, we would just have one show. So it's following a group of 4 executives and their 4 assistants at a women's athletic wear company, but told from each different point of view. So we never were figuring out whether it was 2 half hours, we go back 15 minutes, or the web series way of doing it actually, to me, seems the perfect way, because you can see, you know, one scene, and then you can juxtapose it with the other point of view. And we found a lot of ways to find humor out of that, and just creatively, it seemed to work better. And so we just adapted it for a web series, did some rewrites, and the great thing about a place like Telefilms is that Kristen literally greenlit the project one Sunday afternoon on a phone call, and I had to call her back. I said, does that mean we're making this? Because I'm so used to it going by committee, and has to be the president of the network saying yes, and, you know, so many different people, that it was great to just work with one person.
The other thing I would say about Telefilms that has impressed me from my introduction to them some months back was that they have an incredible network of, you know, TV stars and high profile celebrities that are seemingly, you know, we could start with Catherine Keener, who are anxious to work with the people that are working, you know, to put these projects out. And
well, first
Oh, sorry.
At Catherine's her sister, yes. Yes, they hadn't done too many higher-profile actors. Skirt Chasers was kind of the first big one that they did. And we were so happy when someone like Barry Bostwick, you know, from, you know, he originated the role of Danny Zuko on Broadway in Grease and Rocky Horror, obviously, in Spin City and so many classic things that he would want to be a part of our production. And we literally only have $25,000 to make those episodes. And then when we came up with the idea of we wanted to cover an old standard for the theme song, because Amanda Burse, who directed the other episodes with me, from Married with Children, and I had always loved how that song Love and Marriage, the Frank Sinatra song, was used on her show. So then I came up with the idea, well, why don't we have a woman singing a great song, and we went after Lea Delaria, who agreed to do it. So all these people want, I think, to support what Kristen is doing, but also people like Barry and Meredith Baxter, lucky for me, responded to the material.
And, of course, this project has Sandra Bernhardt in it, so, you know, bringing some star power to your project as well.
I mean, yeah, so Sandra and I met years and years and years ago. We became really good friends right before she went to New York to do her first big show with Us, I'm Nothing. And Jim and I had actually sold a pilot idea for her to Showtime called Sandra Bernhardt Trapped in a Movie of the Week. And each week she'd get trapped in one of those horrible Movie of the Weeks. A little bit before its time, it was because it was such an out-there idea. So we always stayed in touch, and then we ended up working on Roseanne when she was there. So that was really fun. And then when this project came up, she actually was submitted for the project. And I was like, oh, my God, she would really, you know, do one day of work on it. And she, you know, loves to work, and she really wanted to, you know, work again with me and Jim and support this project, and she's been great. So that was really exciting.
Like I said, my first interview for Telefilms was with Lonnie Anderson, who was returning to TV or episodic programming after many years, because it seems like many people are responding to the quality of the writing that is happening at Telefilms. And, of course, obviously...
Yes, that project was brought to Telefilms finished, whereas my two projects, Skirt Chasers and Sex and Execs, were originated at Telefilms. So she didn't acquire them. She was actually involved in producing from the ground up. So we put those pieces together.
As a gay man, I know that there's a male gay character, of course.
You're a gay man?
What? But as a gay man, you're a gay man. aren't we both?
Yes, we are both. Giving you a hard time.
No, it's quite all right. I would expect nothing less, you know, from
some... I'm sure you that I'm not the first.
No, and I would hope not the last.
Let's hope not.
So I'm asking you, as a gay man, you know, I think that many people sort of dive into their own, you know, they pull water from their own well, but writing for lesbian content seems a little different. I'm not sure that I would have, as a writer, the finger on the pulse of what lesbian humor is. And
I love that you have the finger on the pulse.
Yeah, right, exactly. So
I'm gonna have to quote you on that one.
So how is it that you do?
You know, I get that same question when people would say, like, how can you write about four old ladies with the Golden Girls? Like, how can you write about that? And all the time I get questions like, how can you write that? But then I throw back, well, how do science fiction writers write about aliens and monsters? They don't, you know, I mean, unless they have horrible families, but we write from imagination and we write from listening. When I started acting at the age of 7, luckily I had some teachers that said, you know, go out to a mall and just watch people. It's about watching and listening. So I've always took that and ran with it, and in my writing, just always listening. And Jim and I, as writing partners, early on when we were at NYU, students there, we'd write in between classes and after school jobs. We would just like go sit in the park or sit somewhere, and we'd watch people and we'd make up stories like what they were saying or thinking or what their apartment was like. So, and then also in the early days of television, I make it sound like I'm 500 years old, but, you know, there were not a lot of women writing in the writer's room on sitcoms. And there were certainly, like, there were no gay people. We were not even allowed to say we were out gay people. When I first started, I had agents say, you have to bring a woman to any event and, you know, don't talk about your personal life. So we've come so far with that. So Jim and I were the, usually usually the only ones in the writer's room saying, you know, we can't really say that. That's kind of sexist or homophobic or racist, or we had to be those people. I think it's great writing for women because they're much more open with their feelings and emotional, and so that, you know, opens up a lot as far as writing dialogue.
Well, I've always felt that as a writer, some of the things, the best things that one can write that seem the most fictional are actually entirely true. There's literal truth to the fact that you can't make this shit up, kind of thing. So
yeah, I just co-wrote a play based on my mother and her early experiences with dementia, and probably one of the closest things I wrote to my own life. And it was cathartic and so many emotions, but being able to use, you know, real things that happened with me and dealing with her and things she said or things I wanted her to say. I think it always comes from a place of truth, whether I said it or feel it or I hear other people say it or my friends say it. You know, and I have a lot of friends and family that are scared to talk in front of me because they think I'll use it in my writing. But I think they're also very excited when I do use it. The double-edged sword, I think they love that.
I think that secretly people do love it, of course, because, you know, something they've said has become immortalized.
Yeah.
I actually recently started writing a very loosely fictional series based on my own experiences here in San Francisco, and every single person who's involved as a character reads it voraciously to see what I recall from our interactions.
It's fun. It's fun to use it, and then you use your imagination, and then a lot of times I'll have people, especially family members, say, oh, that's me. And I'm thinking, actually, it's not. But if you want to see yourself in that, you know. And then they can work the other way, where sometimes they read things into it that you didn't write. And you have to explain, no, that's not what I meant by that. You know, but everybody comes at it with their own agenda and their experience.
Well, the reason specifically I was curious about the writing for, like, a lesbian audience is because of the fact that I think that for myself, when I touch up on things of race or different sexualities or whatever, I'm always, I don't know if I would say concerned, but I am conscientious of the fact that if I don't express something the way I think that people, members of that community would want me to, that I feel somehow responsible. Does that make
sense? Responsibility and the sensitivity, but I feel I've always been a really sensitive person combined with a very hard shell. But, you know, if it's done with love, I think it's okay. And I think, you know, there's so many people that read something before it actually gets put out there that I kind of get an idea of, you know, if we've crossed a line or we shouldn't say that or we should, you know, tweak these words. Especially on a comedy, we have, you know, a lot of writer friends come and listen to the table read, and, you know, there's always lesbians there, there's straight guys there, there's straight women, I mean, there's all types. So, you know, I think it's important to, you know, take in other people's viewpoints of the written word and what they hear, and because that's important, what people, the takeaway is. You want people to laugh, but also to think about things.
Right, of course. And how did you come about basically molding and creating the cast that you've got involved in the show? There's a lot of people who have done other projects that are rather well known, and to take an eclectic cast like this and bring to light your vision, because I think that would probably be the most difficult element, is finding the people who embody the characters that you've created.
Well, I actually started in casting in New York. My senior year, I worked in a casting department for theater and TV in New York, and I've always just loved casting, and then casting a lot of plays. I feel like I have a good eye for that, and it's just a mixture of finding someone that embodies what you have in your head, but also if there's someone that can come in and surprise you and turn the piece apart into something you hadn't thought about it. That's really cool, and sometimes casting against type is always good. Like, and I also like working with people that I've worked with before and have built a relationship, so I kind of have, like, the Stan Zimmerman players. Olivia Dabo I had met years ago she had come in when Jim and I had an overall deal at 20th to do a pilot for ABC, and we ended up not doing it. And about 6 years ago, I was casting a play in L.A. that we were doing, Joe Orton's Entertaining Mr. Sloan. And there's a great part, except the part was kind of this chubby, not necessarily attractive woman, always played by an older, large woman. And I thought Olivia would be great. She just had this spirit about her that I thought was right for the part. And I wanted her to have a sexuality, although we did, you know, give her a slight fat suit under her dress. And so that was so fun to see her doing that. And then when this came up, I thought this would be such a good role for her as well. So it's just using your imagination, and I've worked with some great casting directors, Geraldine Flood on Skirt Chasers and Julie Gale on Sex and Execs. And, you know, to have creative people come in with ideas, like Julie introduced me to Daniela Bobadilla, who was in Anger Management with Charlie Sheen, and she's now on The Middle, and she plays one of the assistants, and she's actually in a play I'm directing now for the Hollywood Fringe Festival called Pledge, which she'd probably like. It's about hazing and frat life, and it's a very, very, very dark comedy.
You say that I would like it just because... Did you also read that I'm a member of a fraternity?
No, I'm psychic as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think that it's really interesting to have Olivia in this lead role because of the fact that I think so many people my age grew up watching her as a teen child, and, you know, she's not been, her roles on television have not been as prominent since then, but it's definitely against what we grew to know her as, I think, in many ways. It'll be fun to watch her story play out, and we get to be reintroduced to her as an adult now.
Yes. She kind of put her career on the back burner when she had her child, and she spent a lot of years, you know, just wanting to be in L.A. for her child, and then as he got older, she was able to get more back into her career. But it's hard when you know, she was being offered her own TV shows back then before the kid, and when you pull yourself out of kind of the spotlight, you know, you have to work your way back in, but you know, she's done some great work. She got to do some Law and Orders, and, you know, which is very different from her part of the Wonder Years. But she's so funny and such a chameleon, and there's so much I can't wait to explore with her in this part and other projects, because she's just a lot of fun to be around and has a great laugh. So if you ever do a play, have her come and be in your audience.
I was part of a theatrical production of The Golden Girls here in San Francisco.
What did you play?
I played Rose. And then I played Rose for many, many, many years here in San Francisco. But we took the show to Mexico for 2 weeks, and I got to play Blanche, it was very ironic, I'll tell you, Stan, because when I was originally cast for the San Francisco production, I was cast as Blanche, and then we sat down for the table reading, and they moved me to being Rose, which is not completely unlike what the plans were with Betty White either, so... Apparently,
right.
But from what I've read.
And who did you feel you were better as?
Isn't it funny? Because I think that's a question that every gay man asks themselves. Like, which Golden Girl am I? You know, there's the quizzes on Facebook. Which Golden Girl are you?
Yes, I have a button that I'm a Sophia.
Are you a Sophia?
Well, I'm also was the closest to Estelle, and we were buddies. So I just feel an affinity to her, whether I'm really like her. I think I'm turning into more of a Blanche, but I think I'm more of a Rose. I guess Dorothy, actually.
See, that I think is the problem, is that so few people are any one of those archetypes. They're usually
right.
All of the archetypes, in some, depending on the situation.
Did you do the original scripts, or did you do a parody?
We did original scripts.
Uh-huh.
Probably.
Any of mine?
I don't know. I don't know. I was handed a script.
Rose's Mother, The Flu, the one about the teacher harassing Blanche.
We did, like I said, we did it for 10 years. So, and I would say there was probably 60% original script and then 40% parody. So,
and would you ad-lib or was it all planned?
We would, it would depend on the night. You know what I mean?
Okay. And how much you had to drink?
Well, I don't drink, so that was
okay.
Never the case.
You have no excuse.
My thing was, if I'm honest, sometimes the scripts that we chose did not focus too heavily on Rose. And if I decided that I was getting underwhelmed by the amount of stage time I got, Rose would begin to do very bizarre things occasionally.
Well, just like the real one, I guess.
Exactly. So, yeah, we did it for many years, but we found, of course, that the connection to the LGBT community as a whole is, as we've always known, so astronomically high, the level of appreciation and love for that kind of, that product specifically. And I was wondering, as a gay man, and as somebody who was working on that show for a significant amount of time, how did that kind of acclaim change you?
Well, I was so young, when we were just staff writers on it, and from the first season, at the beginning, nobody knew what it was going to be. I mean, we would come in because we didn't have computers where we knew what the ratings were. So, the show would run on Saturday nights, and then Monday at the table read, they would announce what the number was. And I just remember they would say, oh, we're number 15. And we'd be like, oh, my God, that's huge. And next week we're like, well, we're number 10. And then all of a sudden we're 5. And then we're 1, 1, 1. And, you know, it was just this buzz of excitement that, you know, we couldn't believe the good fortune. I mean, we knew there was gold on the stage, but conventional thinking was who would watch a bunch of old ladies? And we found that everybody wanted to. I mean, from little kids to old people. And it's, you know, I can't think of really any other show that everybody loves. You know, there's not a lot of criticism about it. There are other shows where people like, but some people hate it. And there's just something that's so lovable that these women just stand the test of time. And if you go to New York, you got to go to the Rue LaRue Cafe. Have you heard about that?
That's newer, right? That's the Golden Girls Cafe?
It just opened, yeah. This guy that was very close with Rue, she left him all of her clothes and a lot of his money, and he opened up a cafe devoted to Rue McClanahan and the Golden Girls on the Upper West Side, and it's just fantastic and beautiful, and I highly recommend it for everybody. And he gave me a sneak peek before they opened when I was in New York last Thanksgiving. And the odd thing, and he said he didn't plan this, when I walked in, all of a sudden on the flat screen, an episode that I wrote came on. He was just having episodes on a loop. So he could not have known when I was walking in the door, but there was something very eerie about the whole thing. But it was also meant to be. But it was thrilling to be, you know, at the early stages of it. And, of course, it just changed my career. And to be so young and to have been a part of that, you know, when most of my friends were, you know, just moving to L.A. or struggling and starting their careers, to have landed on that was, you know, a lot of good fortune, but also a lot of hard work.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I culturally seems like very significant lightning in a bottle type of scenario, because without question, they compiled a cast of actors and actresses who were already pretty much legendary in the field. But the idea that, as you said, 4 retired women would be able to encapsulate the life experience of gay men and women and, you know, everybody could find their life in those 4 women. And it was really quite something. And I was in high school at the time that most of the run went, and, actually I was in middle school and high school, and it was something that even at a very early age, I just connected with. And the fact that those episodes still to this day, at any given hour, I can turn on my TV and find an episode of Golden Girls speaks volumes for what the work you guys did.
Thank you. I mean, there's some references that even I to this day go, who is that? What is, you know, I didn't love that was part of it. You know, it was so timely that some things don't make sense today, but obviously so much of the feeling behind it still resonates. And I mean, it's been a huge success for Hulu, which is running it. And Jim and I actually just wrote a pilot called The Silver Foxes about 4 gay men. Gay Men's Golden Girls is kind of what the show is. And we did a reading at my house with George Takei and Leslie Jordan and Bruce Vilanch and Todd Sherry and Sherry O'Carry, and it was just an amazing afternoon hearing this, so we're hoping that we can set that up somewhere.
Wow, that sounds like a cast that I would love to see together on
TV. I know, can you imagine that? So, and the pilot is a very interesting story. I don't know if you've ever heard this, but in a lot of retirement homes and senior living, some gays and lesbians are having to go back in the closet. And we thought that was a great way to start the show, where, you know, George Takei and his lover are going to see Leslie Jordan. And, of course, you know, he's the gayest man ever. And he's there butching it up. And they just can't believe what they're seeing. And, they kind of yell at the people at the retirement village. And he gets sent home with them. And that's how they all end up together.
Oh, my. Yeah, first of all, the idea that Leslie Jordan could do anything to butch it up. Is...
Well, we thought that would be such a funny scene of him watching a football game and saying those things. And, you know, we'll probably have to have an expert on the set to teach him, but we'll get him there. And George and Leslie both, you know, are really excited about this project, so I think, you know, I would hope a major network would want to do it, but if not, you know, someplace like a Hulu or a Netflix or Amazon, it would be great if they could take this on. We would love to do it multicam, so it has a real Golden Girls vibe to it.
Well, George Takei is, like, somebody who... It's so interesting to have watched the way he has blossomed into a cultural phenomenon.
Cool. I didn't know him at all. And I just cold emailed him. And I said, here's who I am. This is what I've done. I don't have a script for you, but would you be available on this day for reading? And everybody, I didn't know Leslie Jordan either. Everyone just jumped in and said, I'll be there. And then when they got the script, I mean, it was just hysterical. It was a pretty classic afternoon in my house. So I'm hoping to share that with the rest of the world, you know, on a real TV show. Because I think it could be so great with, you know, everyone else getting older, and especially with gays and lesbians and transgender, we create our own families. And I think that's, you know, what Golden Girls did. Those women came together and supported each other. So this, for me, would be a great full circle moment to have this TV show out there and to be able to speak, like you were saying earlier, really directly about, you know, things that I'm experiencing and my friends, being a gay man, and how we're going to be living for the next, you know, 20, 30 years.
You know, being here in San Francisco, of course, people, I think that many of our public leaders here feel that they are, what is the word I'm looking for? I think that they feel that we are a front runner in ways of dealing with LGBT issues. And one of my friends recently during an interview stated that he feels caring for LGBT seniors and the things that we will be doing as we grow older is one of the top priorities of our community, because quite unfortunately, from various circumstances in the past, that's something we've had to focus less on. In many, many years ago, of course, like people would stay eccentric and closeted, and, you know, their families would help with their lives. And now, of course, that people are less inclined to do so. And then we went through the AIDS epidemic, where many of us never got to be older. And, you know, and now we are, through a variety of means, aging just like the rest of the world. And we need to look as a community on how to make sure that our elders are cared for properly, and that we, as we move towards those days ourselves, have some place to go and the kind of support that we'll need.
Support system.
Yeah, absolutely.
My mother has me, but I don't have any children. So, you know, who's going to take care of me? And I've warned my sister and her kids that they're in charge of that. But, yes, we have each other, and hopefully there'll be more, gay and lesbian and, you know, transgender, you know, places to live all together in a safe environment. And hopefully we can educate those places that are already there, because some are run by more conservative organizations, that they're open to that. So there was this documentary made that was on Logo that we saw, where a lot of people had to go back in the closet and couldn't talk about it, or were ostracized or kicked out because of it.
You know,
I didn't know it. I was horrified, but I thought, if we can do that and be super funny, we can, you know, this could be a really important piece.
Well, the interesting thing is retirement communities in general, There's a reason that the Golden Girls worked, because, you know, I grew up a significant part of my life in Florida. My family still lives there. And we were surrounded by retirement communities. And some of the things that people find shocking also I find very funny. For example, STDs are significantly on the rise among retirees, STIs.
I guess. Heard that.
You know, like, you know, syphilis outbreaks at the retirement community is a hilarious thought to me, especially... Of course, maybe it's just because I'm, like, masochistic or whatever, but I think it's hilarious to think about, you know, grandma getting chlamydia. You know, there's something really friggin' funny.
I'll let you write that episode.
I think that... No, but you have to admit, though, Stan, that's hilarious.
Yes.
You know, can you imagine her grandchildren's response?
No. I mean, if my mother was having sex now, I would be thrilled. I know a lot of people are like, that's gross. But, you know, if it makes her happy, why not? That's my new attitude.
I don't think my mom is having sex, but I will tell you one of the things that shocked me about my mother, and my mother's quite young, actually, but she, you know, it was so grueling for me to come out to her, and I was in my early 20s, and I was, oh, God, I was heart-wrenched and whatever, the typical. And then within 5 years, she had changed her working environment. She went from one company to another. And within 5 years, she was such a fag hag that I couldn't stand it. You know, all of her. And I was like, why couldn't this have happened sooner to ease my transition out of the closet?
She had her own journey.
Exactly. And,
you know, and we can't force anybody into their path. And, you know, that's what's so exciting about the world. And but you got to witness it and probably helped her, you know, a great part of the way to get to that.
So you are currently, you know, you're on the in this path of promotion for Sex and Execs, and you have other projects in the works, but, like, what is the trajectory for what your next project will be?
Well, now that Jim and I have the scripts for Silver Foxes, our goal is to, and then we have George and Leslie attached, is to get that set up. That's very important to us. But we're also developing some other TV projects, and we'll probably be pitching them. We're working on a musical. I write with another writing partner. We do a bunch of plays. We have one called Knife of the Heart about circumcision, which is going to be done in Chicago next spring. And then this play that I did about my mother called Yes, Virginia. It's about my mother and my longtime housekeeper. And it's a very Golden Girls vibe about two women taking care of each other in the prime of their life. And we're bringing that back in December in L.A. And doing a lot of, I'm a big multitasker. I also supervise some other younger writers and set up a half-hour project with a first-time writer, YouTube, Red. So working on that. And just directing a lot of theater in L.A. and hopefully directing it in many other cities. Maybe you'll find a spot for me up in San Francisco.
Oh, that would be fun.
I would love it. I'm really loving directing. You know, I've written so much, but it's just nice to interpret other people's words. And it's really fun and creative. And, yeah, I'm directing two plays at the Hollywood Fringe Festival that they both open on this Saturday. So that's been a juggling act, but very exciting.
You use the term Jim and I so often, it sounds like a astrological sign. Is he...
Well, Jim Berg and I, you know, it's so amazing that we've remained, you know, best friends since our NYU days, and we early on decided that we would not talk over the weekend unless we had some major business thing, so that we look forward to Mondays and getting together and sharing our lives, and we have two very separate lives. He's been married to the same man for, they've been together for, since college, actually.
Holy crap. Good for him.
Yeah, so, you know, it's been great to share this journey. I don't know if I could have done it by myself. It's only in the past, I don't know, 7-8 years where I've ventured out into directing and doing things on my own, like directing this, and that's been very exciting to kind of feel my wings and you know, always being part of a partnership, which is kind of a marriage. I mean, it's so funny. People watch us when we go out to lunch. You know, I look at the menu for him to pick out a vegetarian meal, and he'll, you know, see where the chicken Caesar salad is for me. And, you know, after all these years together, it's cute. I feel very, very fortunate to have met him so early.
It might seem almost rhetorical to ask, but I have a best friend as well, my very best friend, and I find that when I collaborate with him on any kind of a project, I'm much more creative. Do you feel that you are almost better in the relationship than out of it in terms of your creativity?
I used to think that, but I mean, there's a part of me now that I've spread my wings by myself with I'm directing these plays on my own, that it's wonderful to feel I don't have to have another person to do it. There were so many years that I felt like if I didn't have him, I would just fall on my face or I couldn't do anything. And I've been able to, you know, create a couple of projects, one actually a very serious one that maybe I can talk about when we get closer to it, but dealing with suicide. A very good friend of mine took his life 5 years ago, and I created a theater piece, which we did at the Fringe Festival here 2 years ago, using real suicide notes, and read like the vagina monologue with a few actors. But I used collected real letters from Kurt Cobain and more veterans and LGBT and young girls that were bullied, and called right before I go, and we're actually going to do a big benefit at the end of September in New York to launch the play. But I'm hoping to create a foundation like the Vagina Monologues where people can license the script, and the money would go into a fund that would bring awareness to this issue, because the problem is that people don't want to talk about it. So that's something I completely did on my own without Jim or any of my other writing partners, and that's been so illuminating and scary, and but so proud that I can get people talking about it, and it's been really very extremely rewarding.
Well, it's so nice to know that without Jim, you choose really uplifting products. You know,
well, in an odd way, it is uplifting, because I did do some writing in the piece and talking about at the end that, you know, none of us know where we're going to be 5 minutes from now. 5 days, 5 months, so to live for what's around the corner. So people, although they're nervous to go to the play, they leave very uplifted and wanting to do something. And that's a pretty cool feeling that you could get that from people.
I didn't mean to sound dismissive.
No, I know.
The interesting thing is that the timeliness of that subject matter for me is pretty paramount, because over the weekend I went to this seminar, and one of the different things in the seminar was this activity where it was called Crossing the Line, and it basically everybody, a whole bunch of strangers for the most part, are in a room, and they ask you to cross over this line in the center to the opposite side if you've experienced various things, whether it was bullying or, you know, divorced parents or whatever. And one of the things that they asked people to cross the line about was if they have ever contemplated or attempted suicide. And many, many people in the room, the majority actually, crossed the line. And what the person who was conducting the activity asked people to do is look around the room and look at the people who had crossed over, quite often the person next to them, because they were on that side as well, and ask what it would be like if that person was no longer with them.
Oh my God.
And it was very impactful, you know, and I was one of the people who crossed the line. I've never attempted, but I think that there have been times that when I was at my darkest points that the idea, not of dying per se, but of no longer having to live that experience, yeah, crept into my mind. And I think that when I looked at people who were next to me, people I loved in many cases and or have had limited interaction with, but they've always been very positive interactions, it was extremely powerful to think what it would be like if that person had actually taken action and been successful in an attempt to end their own life.
I might have to use that in the play when we did it at Fringe. I would do a talk back after the show, and I would ask people to raise their hand if their lives had been at all affected by suicide. And pretty much 99% of people raised their hands, and then the room just got extremely quiet when they realized that almost everyone here either knew somebody or thought about it or had some connection to it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to add that second part where you just said, I'll imagine these people, if they weren't there, I think that would be even more powerful. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, it was extremely powerful. I remember I tend to, when earlier in this conversation, when you said that you tend to be a very emotional person with a, like a hard shell exterior, I think that many people, I think that that's how people would perceive me too. You know, they see this external side and very Dorothy, you know, very stoic, very hard, very sarcastic. But once under the surface, there's like this boiling cauldron of emotion. And I, you know, so for me in that experience, I had very limited emotional reaction to my own place, you know, being on that other side of the line, having experienced that, those thoughts myself. But when I saw the people that I cared about had also contemplated those same things, and the thought that they wouldn't be with us today was very powerful. Like, I started crying. I think that it would work well in your exercise.
You can come see the show at some point, and I think you'd be really moved by it. And, yeah.
Well, honey, I cry at Golden Girls episodes, so, okay. You know, I, like...
So you're an easy mark?
Absolutely. I'm like, the bar is set pretty low with me in terms of emotional okay. response, but...
Get down to L.A.?
Not super often. I actually have been, I constantly am saying I really need to get to LA more often. I need to get to LA more often.
And you used to live here, right?
I did not. I've never lived in LA. And I moved to San Francisco in 1999, and I split my time working between here and LA early on, not equally, but I'd go down to LA several times a year for work. And still to this day, I have many friends who live in LA, and I would love to get down there more often, but you know how easy it is to get caught up in what's going on in the day-to-day, that it's one of those things. And my best friend, who I mentioned a little bit earlier, who I find that I do work, you know, it's one of those things when you get two people with twisted minds, and when they come together, there's something that happens. It becomes like the tornado where the hot air and the cold air sort of cause this circular motion, and all of a sudden, you know, it's escalated to destructive levels. I think that that's how... my best friend and I are together, but he used to live down there was the point of that. And when he lived in LA, I made it there more often, but he recently moved back to the Bay Area. And I think on a creative level, I've always responded really well to LA because everybody in LA tends to be creative. I don't respond so well to some of the, everybody is there looking for the next connection that's going to move them forward. And that kind of trips me out a little bit, but I do get off on the creative vibe of both L.A. and New York, so...
Yeah, I need to get back to New York on a more permanent basis, but...
So, well, do you not find that New York is, like, very, very, very busy? I find New York stimulating and exhausting at the same time.
It is, because you don't stop. I mean, I don't know how those people do it, and they're always out every night, and it's a lot. But I think if I was there... I mean, I'm hoping to go back for, like, to do a play there and have that experience. That's been just a dream of mine. So I would like to be back and forth a little bit more. But there's just something about New York and kind of went to school there that I land and I just feel like I'm at home. There's just a creative energy, and then you also don't have to rely on cars, and everything is kind of, and you just, you know, it's street theater. Every time you open your eyes and you're on the street, there's just so much to look at.
Well, San Francisco is very that too.
Here.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was in my early 20s, straight out of college, not so straight, but directly out of college, and many of my friends were going to go off to New York to do theater, and I went to visit them January of 1996, I remember, and there was a huge storm, a blizzard, and I was kind of trapped in my friend's house, and I was reading Valley of the Dolls, and I realized, if I move to New York, I'm actually going to accidentally kill myself. Because the pace is nonstop, and I, you know, in my early 20s, I had a significant fear of missing out on something incredible. So, you know, I was like, San Francisco was a nice option because it closes down shop at like 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I'm due for another trip up there. It's been a while. I have a good friend from college that lives there, and I did visit her. But I've been just a little over scheduled here. But
you need
if you're ever down here, let's meet up or if I'm up there.
Absolutely, and I think that you should come up here and scout out theater opportunities for yourself to bring some of your incredible productions up.
I would love to. I did a fringe play up there years, like maybe 5 years ago, but yeah, I definitely need to figure that out because it's a great theater town, and it's just a cool city.
Absolutely. Well, Stan, thank you for talking. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for asking, and nice to meet you via the phone anyway.
Absolutely. Agreed.
And we will meet in person, hopefully soon.
I hope so.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye. All right, everybody, that was Stan Zimmerman. He is a writer of classic television products ranging from the Gilmore Girls to the Golden Girls, as you heard. He and his longtime writing partner, Jim Berg, can be found writing, and Stan himself is directing the new series called Sex and Execs. That's S-E-C-S, you guys, Secretaries and Execs. Sex and Execs on Telo Films, which is geared towards content for the lesbian community. Go check them out at tellofilms.com, TelloFilms.com. I'm Poyet Almar. You're listening to Party Foul Radio, and we'll be back with more right after this. Each and every episode of Party Foul Radio is brought to you by our generous sponsors at Daddy's Barbershop in San Francisco. Go visit Daddy's at the corner of Castro and 19th Street, and be sure to tell Arlen, Jesse, and all the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop that Party Foul Radio sent you. Also, we can be found online at GuideToGay.com, Australia's premier LGBTQ travel and information website. That's GuideToGay.com. And of course, for all of your pleasurable lubrication needs, pick up Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants. Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants can be found available at fine retailers near you. Pro wrestling fans! Poyo Del Mar is returning to Wrestling for Charity at Santa Clara, California on Friday, June 23rd for the Mission City Mayhem event. Mission City Mayhem will feature a one-night Mission City Cup tournament as well as a heavyweight championship match, women's wrestling, and of course, assistant Wrestling for Charity general manager Poyo Del Mar as well. So please mark your calendars for Friday, June 23rd, Mission City Mayhem in Santa Clara, California. Join Wrestling for Charity and Poyo Del Mar for an incredible evening of pro wrestling excitement. For more information, go to wrestlingforcharity.com. All right, everybody, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Poyet Almar.
And I'm Pearl T.
We just heard from Stan Zimmerman telling us all about his new Telo Films project, Sex and Execs. If you would like to read more about that or find out more about that or watch that, please go to TelloFilms.com, TelloFilms.com. Plus, keep your fingers crossed because that new Silver Foxes show that he said he's working on sounds hilarious.
Oh, Silver Fox.
Yes, girl. I mean, and he mentioned, like, an all-star cast, George Takei from, or George Takei, I don't know if it's Takei or Takei. George Takei, legendary for his role on Star Trek, and even more legendary, perhaps, because he has scathing wit on Twitter, bitches. You need to follow George Takei on Twitter. Leslie Jordan, of course, everybody knows Leslie Jordan. We've loved him on American Horror Story. We loved him on Will and Grace. Mm-hmm. I really want to try to get him on the show at some point. And Bruce Valanche, I think that's a great... That's some really funny men right there. So that could be hilarious. So fingers crossed for that. But meanwhile, do not miss out on Sex and Execs, Stan Zimmerman's new project on Telo Films, which features Olivia Dabo as well as Sandra Bernhardt. So go check it out, you guys. Anyway, we are rapidly coming to the close of this episode, girl.
Right. So you guys just make sure you do not forget to check out our sponsors. Go ahead and head on over to Daddy's Barbershop on 19th and Castro if you're here in San Francisco.
Yes, and we recently helped raise over almost $500 for the Castro Country Club because we donated two big prize packages to Intensive Claire's Garden Party Gala from our beautiful sponsors at Swiss Navy Lubes. Swiss Navy Premium Lubes is going to give you all the joy and pleasure you need in the bedroom, honey, and beyond.
For each hole.
Yes, honey. They got something for every hole. Mm. And we sold two prize packages at her auction for $200 each.
That's sickening, girl.
So, thanks in part to also some of our friends here at Steamworks in Berkeley.
Oh,
we put together a Swiss Navy Premium Lube package with free passes to go to Steamworks, bitch. They are, like, those sluts that bought that are going to get it on, Hinty.
Yes.
So check out our Swiss Navy Lube sponsors.
And then don't forget to go to GuideToGay.com to check out our sponsors down under.
Find out all of the happenings in the LGBTQ community in Australia as well as beyond, because this is Pride Month, honey, and they're covering prides from around the world. So go to guidetogay.com for more information.
That's amazing. Don't forget to check out Left Magazine over at leftmagazine.com if you're not here in the city to pick up a copy yourself.
Yeah, Pearl's totally wrong. Go to liveleft.com.
Oops, girl, my bad. Liveleft.com. Go, you know.
Go check out Left Magazine for all of your LGBTQ entertainment and events information for Northern California, as well as their beautiful photo pictorials. They have full color pages, probably like 20 each issue.
And it's really a beautiful magazine.
It is. It's gorgeous. So go check them out at liveleft.com. Meanwhile, do not forget to follow us. Please, by all means, go and check us out on Twitter and on Facebook. Our official Facebook page is facebook.com/partyfoulradio. And you can follow us on Twitter at Party Foul Radio. This is episode 69, you guys. I cannot believe it. It feels like not that long ago that we were doing episode 50, and we're almost, you know.
Right, girl.
I remember episode 1, honey, so.
Next week is going to be episode 70.
I'm working to get us some super fun celebrities to join us for that. I don't know who they'll be just yet, but of course, you know that we bring you the best in celebrities, entertainment. We want to entertain, educate, and inform each and every episode of Party Foul Radio. I hope that you agree that this episode has done all of those for you.
All right, you guys. We will catch you next week.
I'm Poyet Omar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
And we're out of here.
Bye.
I'm a shit in your face. Piss in your mouth. And live on these walls, right?
It's so fun. She's the one. What the?